you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, friends. Good to see you again, and welcome back to the Bill Press Pod. Looking ahead to November, this is big-time worry time for Democrats, despite the fact that the economy's strong, unemployment's at a historic low, and some 400,000 new jobs are being created every month. Polls show that the American people are still in a funk, which is never good for the party in power and not good for Democrats today. So what should Democrats do in this environment? Is there any chance they can hold on to the House and the Senate? Is there some magic they can work in Congress? And will outrage over the Supreme Court decision on Roe v. Wade energize the Democratic base enough to turn things around? For answers today, we turn to one of the leading progressives in the House, Congressman Mark Pocan, representing Wisconsin's second congressional district since 2013 and former co-chair of the House Progressive Caucus. By the way, just a quick footnote. At moments in this podcast, there are some problems with the audio. Sorry about that, but don't worry. You can clearly understand everything Congressman Pocan is saying. Congressman Mark Pocan, it's always good to connect with you. Thanks so much for joining us on the Bill Press Pod.
Thanks for having me, Bill. Glad to be here.
Well, of course, Washington got a kind of a nuclear bomb last week with the leak of this draft decision by Justice Samuel Alito, which would overturn Roe v. Wade, for which he apparently already has all the votes necessary. Congressman, what's your assessment of the impact of that decision, assuming it sticks, both on American women, but also on American politics?
You know, a lot of things, right? I mean, first of all, a lot of people didn't think this was ever going to happen. This is settled law, half a century. People who've gone before the Senate to be nominated and proved as Supreme Court justices have basically said, no, this will never happen. And yet we know that this has been the plan for decades. So yep. I guess we shouldn't be surprised it's happening, other than that people denied it when they were getting nominated and appointed. And, you know, this is extremely unfortunate in the sense that this is going to set back a half a century of law saying that women can't make their own decisions about their health care and their bodies. And in reading the leaked draft, you know, they also showed some slippery slope other areas they may go to. I mean, the very next morning, I got calls from people saying, hey, marriage equality, is my marriage still going to be recognized? Well, maybe not, if you read the memo. And that's the problem, is now it looks like the court is going to be a very activist court from a very extremist kind of perspective. And, you know, this should be a wake-up call for everyone that if it turns out this is their decision and the way they go, elections truly, truly have consequences, and appointments have consequences, and people just have to be very ready to act.
By the way, you and I remember when Republicans used to accuse Democrats of appointing activist judges, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're great at doing things like, you know, saying exactly what they're doing, attacking that and saying we're doing it. You know, they go after people often and attack their strengths in order to make them weaknesses. I mean, they're not afraid to hold anything back. And I think, you know, Democrats, sometimes we may be a bit too genteel in how we respond with things. But, you know, the Republicans have never been ashamed of they're there to get something done. And that, in this case, it's a very extremist agenda. But that's what the modern Republican Party is.
Do you believe that this will serve as a wake-up call to Democrats, to independents, even pro-choice Republicans, that these midterms really matter and could make a difference?
I do. And all elections matter, right? And this is what it should send to many folks, because again, I think thinking people thought this would never happen based on the actual statements of Supreme Court nominees. And now we see that, you know, this is the real agenda that's been out there to overturn 50 years of law just for political extremism. Means the only way people can be heard is to get rid of people who appoint these types of folks, who vote for the confirm these types of folks. And I think it will be a wake-up call. And don't forget, it's taking away freedoms, right? Again, Republicans are great about talking about freedoms, yet they're the ones actually taking them away. And this is the freedom to make decisions about your own bodies and healthcare. And if they start going after things like marriage equality, the decisions to, you know, about who you love and go down the list, I think there's a lot more that will also be an attack in the very near future if this goes through.
So I find it somewhat amusing, Congressman, that rather than taking a victory lap, right, as you said, this is something Republicans have been working for actively, promising for over 50 years, right? But rather than taking a victory lap and crowing about it and popping the champagne cork, they're kind of trying to run away from this decision now, right? I mean,
oh yeah, Laura Ingraham, right? She's like, oh, this is terrible timing. Well, why does the timing matter if this was something you desperately want to get done? Oh, because you want to continue to hoodwink and lie to people. Now I understand why you may not be out there talking about it. And why aren't, you know, people like Donald Trump more aggressively talking about, you know, what he's accomplished through his court appointments? You know, there's a reason. They know this is wildly unpopular. I think the best poll I've seen for their stance is at about a third of Americans. And in most, it's the more extremist parts of this are like in the double digits in the teens. You know, if you ask someone, if you thought someone who's been raped or, you know, had to, for rape or incest, should you be able to make sure that you don't bring a baby into this world? And, you know, that polls very, very, very low, and yet this very extreme position will likely impact people in all sorts of cases and leave it to the states.
So the question is, I think that some of us are asking is, while Republicans try to run away from it, will Democrats make sure they can't run away from it? Will Democrats use this as an issue to say, look, this is one issue you've got to get out there and vote in these midterms on this issue, on abortion? Are Democrats prepared to do that?
We better. I mean, I think the Senate this week is going to do what the House already passed, which is codifying Roe versus Wade into law, right? I mean, it's important that, you know, we do that. The problem is with a 50-50 Senate and a 3 or 4 seat margin, depending on the time of this session we've had in the House, it's been really tricky to get some things done. But, you know, if the people who sometimes are afraid of their constituents are afraid of their constituents on this one, then, you know, we're all going to wind up paying a really severe price for this. So I hope, you know, people, this is a core issue, I think, as a Democrat, the freedom to make decisions about your own healthcare and your own body, and decisions about who you love. I mean, if we're going to be afraid to stand up for those sorts of things, then, you know, we will pay a price for that.
So Congressman, I want to circle back to something we talked a little bit about. And that is this leaked opinion by Justice Samuel Alito. You know, in his writing, he says that one of the reasons for overturning Roe v. Wade is because way back in 1787, our founding fathers didn't talk about abortion. It's not an enumerated right in the Constitution.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, first of all, he's going to what? The law from the 1600s? Like, I mean, this is crazy stuff, right? That what we read in this opinion. I thought Saturday Night Live did a great job with their opening skit on Saturday night, you know, showing the absurdity of much of the argument in a modern world. But on top of that, the fact that they mentioned things like marriage equality, you know, that's very real. And I think, you know, people are very concerned. There have been a lot of protests and rallies, you know, clearly already in my district and across the country. This is something that, you know, people see as an extremist position, but that's what the Republican Party is. It's just, you know, they never want to tell you that. But if you see that slippery slope in other areas, it's you got to wonder when you're going to lose your freedoms in order to appeal to extremists in the Republican Party. I mean, the Republican Party, you know, used to be just made up of greedy people and politically extreme on the conservative social spectrum. You know, now it's even gotten worse under Donald Trump, and yet the real ramifications are a lot of erosions of rights for a lot of different people.
So, Congressman, the last time we talked, we spoke about the Build Back Better initiative and legislation, that package in Congress. Is there anything left of Build Back Better? Is it just gone?
So what the Congressional Progressive Caucus and some of the other caucuses are doing right now are encouraging the president to do executive orders, because with a 50-50 Senate, with a few of the senators, Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, and maybe others on certain issues, it's almost impossible to get anything done. And as much as there are great things in that Build Back Better agenda that would be wildly popular, as you know, in Washington, there's also a ton of special interests. And there's a lot of people who I think all too often are almost afraid of their own constituents. And because of that, you're going to see it's been difficult to finish the rest of the Build Back Better agenda. Don't forget, infrastructure was a part of that agenda. So there's another way to do that. And I think many of those items can happen through executive orders. Not all can, but many can. And while they're not as permanent as being in statute, it's certainly a way to show how they can work. And then we can have, I think, a better chance to get them done so that they'll be in law and permanently in place for people. So, you know, we think it's important the president start acting now. I don't think any more time has to be wasted. We should be doing these several a week and showing people what will actually get done, in addition to stopping the craziness of what we saw last week on Roe versus Wade. But what you'll also see is the continuation of the benefit from electing Democrats. You know, we passed the American Rescue Plan last year. We passed the infrastructure bill this year. We've passed the COMPETES Act, which will be soon passed through the House and Senate and signed by the president, about computer chips and trying to bring down costs and make more things here in America. We passed a postal reform bill that almost got no notice. And yet, you know, we've talked about it for a decade, that fixes this craziness of having to prepay employee benefits 75 years into the future, that made the post office financially insecure. And we also protected six-day mail delivery for people, which I'll tell you, organically, it's probably in the top three issues I hear from constituents. They're concerned about postal issues, right? We did that. So we've done a lot of good things. The problem is there's a COVID hangover. Inflation has taken people away from many listening to maybe some of the other things we've done. But if you could start getting executive orders out there and get those done, again, you're showing what we can do. If you let us pick up Wisconsin and Pennsylvania in the Senate, and you let us pick up some additional seats in the House, how we can get those things done.
Give us a couple of examples of executive orders that, first, let me ask, are you working with the White House on these executive orders? Are they open to this?
Yes, they are open to this. So a couple of weeks back, I think 13 of the caucuses went in and met with the White House. And I know it wasn't just ours. I think it was the Hispanic caucus and others as well came in with a list of things that they would like to see done via executive order, you know, just looking at the reality of a 50-50 Senate. And given that...
Give us a couple of examples of things that you'd like.
Eliminating student debt. You know, there have been a variety of, I guess, the amount of the proposals. The president had previously talked about 10,000. We would like to see more, but you know what? Let's relieve some student debt so that people can get going with their lives, because those jobs are going to help us to, you know, get the economy going, and they have been. Things like worker protections, you know, and some of the laws that we have around overtime. You know, there was a law that was done via executive order under President Obama. It got turned over under the Trump administration on overtime pay, and we think there's a place that they can go back to that won't get overturned that could protect people. Because right now, I think the level is if you make $33,000, that's enough that you don't get any overtimes. Well, $33,000 isn't all that much, right, for someone working full-time, especially if that overtime isn't paid for and then you're working 60 hours a week for that or more. So there's worker protections. There's environmental issues that we can do. There's a whole lot of things, and we've proposed a number of them as a progressive caucus, but other caucuses have as well. And I'm hoping that the president will start doing those pretty quickly, because I think it's time for people to find out. I think they're tired of watching things not happen, and trying to explain a 50-50 Senate is a longer conversation than you can really do to let people know that you're getting things done. And that's why we need to move on these as fast as possible.
Especially when you can't even count on all 50 Democratic votes, right?
Well, exactly. And that's, I think, the very obvious problem. So,
How do you think, how does the progressive, you as a former co-chair of the Progressive Caucus, your fellow progressives, how do you feel so far about Joe Biden and how he has responded to the progressive agenda, if you will?
I mean, I've been very impressed on multiple levels. You know, I went to four states for Bernie Sanders and, you know, was very happy to do that. And but I'll tell you, the Joe Biden administration has been amazing in reaching out to members, reaching out to the Progressive Caucus on a very regular basis. I would argue our caucus had the president's back on Build Back Better more than anyone because we appreciated the values that he was putting out there and trying to get done. You know, I think there's always areas we'd like to see some additional measures or improvement, but the amount of outreach has been exceptional, and I really feel like they listen and are trying to get things done.
Do you think some progressives have been a little too hard on Biden, too tough on Biden? I mean, I've heard progressives, just over the weekend, there were progressives chanting, "Where's Joe?" on the in front of the Supreme Court, right? Progressives complaining that Biden hasn't done enough about climate change or whatever. Do you think some of your fellow progressives maybe are not, are a little too strong here?
By and large, my position is shared by, I think, most progressives. I'm just saying that anecdotally, but, you know, the amount of access has been exceptional. I mean, Build Back Better, the agenda around daycare and the child tax credit and, you know, so many issues around climate and others we've strongly supported. So, you know, it's not his fault those things didn't happen. It's a few folks over in the Senate's fault why they didn't happen. And, you know, you can't fault the person who actually came up with the idea to do those. So, you know, I think there's always people who like to complain, but sometimes may not actually follow politics as closely as they should. I saw that this morning alone. There was a situation where there was a damage done, supposedly a Molotov cocktail thrown inside very conservative place in my district that advocates against personal choice around abortion, against equality for the LGBTQ plus community. And, you know, I already saw tweets this morning saying, oh, there was a Molotov cocktail at an abortion clinic in Madison. No, actually, not at all. But people sometimes take stuff and maybe don't have all the facts. I think in the case of Joe Biden, the facts are he has led in many areas more progressive than I have seen a Democrat in the White House probably in my adult lifetime. And I'm going to try to acknowledge those things and push for more where we want to push for more.
You mentioned worker protections, Congressman. Speaker Nancy Pelosi this week came up with a proposal of her own, which I think she has the authority to do on her own, and that is set a minimum pay scale for congressional staffers of $45,000. I'm sure that was welcomed by your staff and others, long overdue, right?
Yeah, I mean, especially those, usually the entry-level positions, you know, are staff assistants. And I remember when I first got to Congress, not our office, but other offices paid in the upper 20,000s to start someone off in that position just not even a full 10 years ago. And you know how expensive it is to live in Washington. I think an average one bedroom is probably somewhere between $2,200 and $2,600. Clearly, that was not a pay that would work to actually live on unless you had parents who were wealthy and were taking care of you, or you were, you know, seven people to a two-bedroom apartment, which I know there's stories of. And none of that is healthy. So I'm glad we're doing that. Plus, I think we're going to be looking at some other measures of unionization that while it's by federal law, it's somewhat limited what they can bargain for, but it will give our employees to be able to even have more protections. As you know, it's a very long hours job in many cases. At least minimum pay is something that's very long overdue, as well as some other protections.
I'd have to add a word that if Starbucks employees now and Amazon employees can form a union, so can congressional staffers. I was really happy to see speaker make that clear.
You know, if I can, Bill, I mean, one thing that, you know, because, you know, and that's my background. I've been a union member for three decades, Painters and Allied Trades, and started the Labor Caucus with Don Norcross and others. And, you know, one of the most, I think, positive developments, not just that public opinion is so high on giving workers a voice through unions. But we've watched what's going on in Starbucks. We're watching what's going on in Amazon. We're watching what's going on in the video game industry in my district. You know, we're seeing very non-traditional industries looking at unionization because of the abuses of some of the companies that have been hiring people. And I think that's fantastic. You know, it's for too long, I think we looked at the old paradigm of organizing, and that was only in certain positions. And now we're realizing that the real work that has to happen. And it's been really exciting. And we've had a lot of those folks coming and talking to the Labor Caucus and sharing the stories, you know, across the country.
Right. And I might add, news organizations like BuzzFeed, the employees, just organized and formed a union. In HuffPost, they did that a couple of years ago. And interesting, in both cases, they did it despite management fighting against them. But they carried the day, which was really great. Lots to talk about. Congressman, I want to say, we'll take a quick break if we can, and then come back and find out what's going on in that great swing state of with Wisconsin. Quick break, and we'll be right back. Well, in addition to that Alito leak, Ukraine, of course, is the big story in the news this week, especially with First Lady Jill Biden making a very courageous unannounced visit to Ukraine. And it reminds us of the great work that Chef Jose Andres is doing in Ukraine, in Poland, in Slovakia, and other countries, helping the refugees from the war in Ukraine, doing the Lord's work in that area, serving already over 13 million meals to victims of the war in Ukraine. They need our help more than ever. In fact, Russian missiles struck one of the World Central Kitchen's facilities inside of Ukraine this week. So I want to remind you again, what great work they're doing, how much they need our help. Please go to World Central Kitchen, WCK.org, and send Jose Andres and the World Central Kitchen whatever help, as much help as you can. Thank you.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back with the Bill Press Pod. Our guest today, Congressman Mark Pocan from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District, former co-chair of the Progressive Caucus, and certainly one of the leading progressives in the House of Representatives. Wisconsin, boy, it is always very interesting politics in Wisconsin. What's going on, Congressman? I mean, let's go back to what we talked about, the importance of abortion as an issue in the 2022 midterms, particularly in Wisconsin. I didn't realize, looking at a few notes here to prepare for our interview, Wisconsin actually has a over 100-year law that bans abortion in your state?
Yeah, we would unfortunately be one of those states that will go back to the, you know, previous years of treating women with full equality. And, you know, the problem is our legislature is so gerrymandered, and those maps were just approved by the Supreme Court through the redistricting process, that they're going to continue to be in charge in the House and the Senate. So our governor's race is so very important. And, you know, Tony Evers has been an exceptional governor for so many issues, and especially choice is one of them. But if we don't have him in that position, this gerrymandered legislature will make all kinds of terrible laws that will follow from this decision. So, you know, our governor's race is really key. Also our Senate race, you know, Ron Johnson, I've heard, these are not my words, but people have called him America's dumbest senator. I'm not saying, that's not me saying that, that's what I've heard. But, you know, he is awful and doesn't do very much for the people of Wisconsin in so many ways. I mean, he's just, most recently, I think his most recent comment was, he was on a panel with someone, and someone said that you could get AIDS from the COVID vaccine. And he said, well, that may be true, but so here he is accepting something as crazy as a position that you can get AIDS from the COVID vaccine now. Like, even the crazy people look at him and go, ooh, that's crazy. And that's Ron Johnson, you know, now saying things like that. So if we get rid of Ron Johnson, we'll finally be able to get something through the Senate. You know, Wisconsin and Pennsylvania are a couple of the states that are so important. And in the House side, Ron Kind's seat, the third congressional district in Wisconsin on the western edge of Wisconsin, is a swing district. And if we don't win that seat, we may not have the House of Representatives. So the House is looking at Wisconsin. The Senate's looking at Wisconsin. The gubernatorial folks who follow governor's races are looking at Wisconsin. We've got a lot on the ballot that's going to matter this November.
Now, in the governor's race, let's start there. It's pretty clear, right? It's a total black and white between Tony Evers, who does support abortion rights, and whoever his most likely opponent, I think, is what, Rebecca Clefish? Is that how you pronounce
her name? I'll tell you, there's a bunch of folks. I don't know if she is. You know, she's a former lieutenant governor under Scott Walker, but, you know, not the most impressive elected official Wisconsin's ever seen. And because of it, there's a big Republican primary. There's a state rep who is a total extremist, who's been talking to Trump, who believes in banning rape, banning abortion, including in the cases of rape and incest, who's running. There's two self-funded candidates or with self-funders behind them running, Nicholson and... I'm going to forget even the names. There's a bunch of these folks. There's
Tim Michaels.
Tim Michaels is the other one. Yeah. Yes. And so you've got a bunch of candidates, and there's still a few others that are a little lesser, but I don't think it's a certain who's coming out of that primary yet, but they're all courting to the far right to get Trump support and that element of the base's support. So you can imagine the type of proposals they're going to be putting out there and how extreme they're going to be.
Right. And just the bottom line is, right, that how Wisconsin goes on this issue of choice will depend on who wins the governor's race in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. Because of the legislature being gerrymandered and that those maps are now official, absolutely. Our governor will completely matter on whether we look like Mississippi or we look like Wisconsin.
So back to Ron Johnson. Am I correct? Didn't Ron Johnson promise he was not going to run for a third term?
Yeah, but Ron is Ron, right? Like he's very enigmatic in not just in an interesting way, but more in a strange way, right? So he said he wouldn't run, and then now he is, and I forgot even the reason he gave. But, you know, we had 1,000 jobs that were coming to Wisconsin, to the Fox Valley area, to build electronic vehicles for the Postal Service. And they decided to Instead, those would have been good union jobs to send them to South Carolina. That company, they kind of did a bait and switch. Many of us helped advocate for them. And now they're going to be down in South Carolina. And his response was, well, we already have enough jobs in Wisconsin. I mean, what state would say that? What U.S. senator would say, we already have enough good paying family supporting jobs in our state? And he's also, you know, the guy who said that mouthwash could kill COVID. And he's got a lot of extremist, crazy, really unusual, even by unusual standards, that he's put out there. And I think his polling numbers are not strong. He is not well liked here. And I think that we have a good chance to take him out.
Unless I'm wrong, let me put it this way. Has he always been so crazy? Or when he was first elected, did he just hide it?
No, he was kind of Tea Party before there was Tea Party, but now I think really he was Q before there was Q, right? Like he's always been like this. He had a chief of staff for a while that I don't want to embarrass the guy, but you know, kept him in check, and he left a few years back, and you can tell a difference, almost like a clock, when he started going full rojo again with all these crazy conspiracy theories and, you know, odd ideas and everything else. And so I think, you know, for a while he did better with good staffing, but once, you know, that good person went on to some other things, you know, rojo went full rojo. And most recently, you know, I've been dealing with him on some other stuff where I think he's been extremely homophobic and trying to appeal to the base. And, you know, this guy will gladly confirm every Supreme Court justice who actually would tell the truth rather than lying about things they do, like on Roe versus Wade. And that's how much of an outlier Ron Johnson is.
By the way, I love your name for him, Rojo. I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah, that's the around here. That's what we call him. It's
I'll steal that from you if you don't mind.
Please do.
and the other thing that's going on, if I'm correct, is that isn't there still an active effort in Wisconsin to prove that the 2020 election was fraudulent?
Yes, I hope people kind of forget about that, but I know it's still happening.
I thought they had, but apparently some people have not, right?
It's this incredibly embarrassing effort by a former Supreme Court justice who was pathetic, is the best term, yeah, I'll use. And now he is in charge of this. And he was going to continue this even if the assembly stopped, you know, the legislature stopped funding him, because he's enjoying it. He's going to every MyPillow conference. He's, you know, meeting with every extreme group. And they're still investigating the election. We've had nonpartisan agencies look at the election, and we actually have really great election laws and standards in Wisconsin. But they did this in order to keep Donald Trump happy. If they didn't, he was going to complain about all sorts of Republicans here, and they have to deal with the base. So, you know, they wound up putting this together, thinking, okay, you know, it'll go away. But the guy they put in charge is kind of like, you know, the guy who, you know, loves to get out every year and drive the Shriner car around, but he's doing it full time. Like, you know, he's really making this a circus, and we look very embarrassed because of it. And I don't know how they're going to get control, because, you know, rightfully so, they were going to stop funding because he's still not finding anything. And if you stop funding, then Donald Trump gets upset. So they're in this loop of idiocy, and they don't know how to get out of it.
Well, I think the question, Congressman, that a lot of people asking, Democrats in other states are asking, so they look at Wisconsin, which has been a swing state, some great Democrats, but then unfortunately some pretty crazy Republicans elected, and a state that Donald Trump carried in 2016, but Joe Biden carried in 2020. So how did you do it in Wisconsin? What did Democrats do in Wisconsin? And what should Democrats in other states learn from your experience in Wisconsin?
So we're a purple state, but not because we're purple. We've got areas of red and areas of blue that make us a purple state. It's really a lot about turnout. We've got a really strong Democratic Party right now. Ben Wickler is our chair. He used to be Move On nationally, and he's done a great job on doing grassroots outreach, not just at election time, talking to voters. People agree with us and on the issues. So if we get them out to vote, we will win elections. We won't be purple. We'll be bluish purple. We'll be indigo blue. But if we have less turnout, that's when people like Ron Johnson win.
And that's really the message for Democrats nationwide, isn't it? Turnout, turnout, turnout.
Absolutely. But you've got to earn it. You know, you have to talk to people and listen to them and talk about their issues. And that's why if we as Democrats don't talk about what's happening with Roe versus Wade, we will be making a huge mistake because that's what people are talking about.
Congressman Mark Pocan, thank you so much for joining us today. Always good to talk to you. Thanks for your good work. And we will see what happens in these midterms, follow these elections, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks,
Sounds Congressman. Good. Thank you very much, Bill. Appreciate it.
And that's it for today's podcast with Congressman Mark Pocan. Thanks to the good congressman. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We will remind you that we'll be back on Friday with this week's roundtable, looking again at the continued fallout from the Samuel Alito draft opinion on the Congress and on the politics of the day. Until then, please take good care of yourselves. Be strong, be safe, be sane, and come back and see us Friday for the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.